I did it for weeks and weeks, going into months, and never got anything. And then I remember I got my first link. My first one was on the New York Times. And I think AI is a vitally important tool in our toolbox, but we have to make our pitches and our content not look like AI. In order to do that, you can use...
In today's episode, I'm going to sit down and talk to Chris Pantelli, the founder of Linkify. If you ever heard of HARO, which stands for Help a Reporter Out, HARO is an extremely hard process to get your brand's name out there by connecting with journalists and positioning your brand as a subject matter. Doing HARO is extremely competitive because journalists do reach out on the internet about asking a lot of people's opinion about one subject, but only one brand can be featured as a subject matter. What it means is that you have to stand out and you have to reply the fastest way possible for these journalists to feature you.
Speed is an important factor. So they will sort of post their request and they'll often say how urgent their request is and they'll give a deadline as well.
Normally these backlinks from magazines cost hundreds, if not $1,000 to be featured on. And Chris is going to show us exactly how he does it with speeding up with artificial intelligence and his way of reaching out to journalists. And now let's get into the episode. All right, welcome everyone to the Aspiring CMO podcast. Today I've got Chris with me. How are you, Chris?
Very good. Thank you, Arnie. Hope I'm saying that right.
Yes, perfectly, actually.
Yep. How did you? I did my research.
So today we're going to talk about HARO and link building. And if you guys don't know what HARO is, it means help a reporter out. So I tried that process one time. I massively failed, and I'm proud to say it because at least I tried, you know. Mm-hmm. But today I've got an expert with me today. But Chris, please introduce yourself. Tell us your journey, how you got there, and yeah, what's up?
Okay, yeah. Well, thank you so much for having me on the podcast, Arnie. My journey into the digital marketing space. So I graduated from university with a degree in economics. And then straight out of university, I went to run the family fish and chip shop business in the UK. So a bit of a leap. I always wanted to have my own business and it seemed like a shortcut path into that. And we did really well for 10 years. It was good. But obviously with like changings in people's eating habits, the mass influx of like food options flooding the market. I also got diagnosed type 1 diabetes as well at the age of 32, 33, something like that. And I remember thinking, this is such a physically demanding job, being on my feet all day, 12 hour days, margins just coming down. And I just thought to myself, after going on the internet, you come across these blog income reports. And I just thought, oh, there's got to be something to this. So I hammered down, I sort of learned WordPress, keyword research, that sort of thing, started a finance site. And within a few months, we were making like $1,000 a month. I was getting traffic. I couldn't believe it. I thought it was brilliant. So at that time, I also came across the importance of link building. And how important it was to have like good quality links to your website. And that's when I came across HARO, as it was known then. It's moved to Connectively now. Help a reporter out. And this is the way that you could get your website featured in like massive household name publications like The Times, BBC, Guardian, New York Times. And you had to sort of scour these emails sent thrice daily and then try and pitch the journalist with your story or your opinion and hope that they would pick your quote and link to you. And I remember doing it. Arnie, you said you did it and failed. I did it for weeks and weeks, going into months and never got anything. And then I remember I got my first link. My first one was on the New York Times and it was do follow link. The journalist quoted me and linked to my website. And from that point, I was hooked. I thought, I can do this. So I really dived into that, honed my my systems, my strategies, and it went really well, built some fantastic links. As the website grew, I wanted to build some different types of links to our money pages. I wanted to do some guest posting, but I didn't have the time running the fish and chip shop for, you know, 12 hours a day, 6 days a week. So I outsourced that to who is now my business partner. So he was running an agency. They were crushing it with skyscraper outreach, guest posting. So I asked him to basically do that work for me. And he looked at my link profile for my finance site and said, where did you get all these links from? Like New York Times, Forbes, New York Post. How did you get these links? And I said, oh, I've been doing HARO. So he said, oh, is there any way you could build some of these links for some of his clients? So I thought, okay, I could give that a go on top of the 12-hour days I'm already doing. So this was going like to 1, 2 a.m. in the morning, just doing some extra pitches for his clients. We crushed it. The clients loved it. They came back for more orders. And then we sort of noticed the real organic demand for this, because it is super time consuming, really labor intensive, but the quality of the links that you can get is just fantastic. So it was quite an easy value proposition for us to sell this as a service. Like, if you hire us, we can go and build these links for you. So they're not paid links, but it's paying for us to do that that graft and that hard work for you. And then 3 years later, here we are today. And it's been an awesome journey.
Hi, if you listened to this far, thank you so much for listening. And if you enjoyed the show, please leave me a review on either Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or my YouTube channel. If you have any feedback for the show, please let me know on the Aspiring CMO Podcast social media pages on Facebook and Instagram, or send me an email on my website. Now, let's get back to the episode. Thank you so much for this great summary. I think there's a lot of things to dig in, like just for your personal journey, how you have like overcome like working 12-hour shifts, being diagnosed with basically like a very bad disease that you just cannot get rid of. I know my father also had diabetes. Like that's a tough one. But I guess for the sake of this marketing focus, let's start with one case study that you remember that you did with Haro. Like, what was that story, that angle that like the journalist just picked it up and you got links?
That one was that first one that I got the link for was they wanted to know about a Christmas, anybody that had a business, a bricks and mortar business. So that spoke to me directly, that was doing some form of staff Christmas like party, even during the pandemic. So I think the pandemic lockdown hadn't quite been as brutal in the UK at that point. So we were able to put together like a go-karting weekend Christmas staff sort of do. And the journalists loved that. It like resonated. I put a really interesting quote in there saying, talking about as a Brit. So obviously the New York Times is a US publication, but I knew that they'd probably prefer to link to a US source. So I talked about being from across the pond and having like a different perspective. And I think that resonated with her. So most of the quotes that she included were from US sources, but they also included mine as like an alternative perspective from. And then she actually used my line verbatim, like across the pond. So this Brit from across the pond is doing a go-karting like Christmas do. So it was just having that sort of unique take, unique angle, and trying to persuade the journalist that it would also be a good inclusion in a otherwise more US-centric article.
I see. So did you already come up with that story before they ask, right? So there's like a proactive approach to this Haro link building, that you have to predict what topics they want to know.
No, so the difference between digital PR and Haro, or Haro is the umbrella term for press requests. So journalists press requests, the most prominent platform being Haro now, Connectively. But you can see these press requests on platforms like Quoted, Press Plugs, also directly on Twitter. Journalists will just hashtag PR request and then put their request there. So the difference between that and pure digital PR, which we also do as a company, but I think press requests is an easier way for people just starting out to get in. So with a PR campaign, you're going to craft a story that you think is going to resonate with journalists in the news currently. Maybe it's a reactive piece, something that's happening in the news at the minute. And you're going to proactively take that story to the journalists, where you have somewhat of a control over the narrative. And you're going to hope that that resonates with the media list of journalists that you built. So journalists that have covered similar topics in the past, for example, a trending story, and you have a story for yourself or your client that somewhat aligns to that trending topic. And that's a really proactive approach. Whereas the PR requests, that's reactive. So you're waiting to see what the journalists are asking for. And Haro sends 3 emails a day, or they used to. Now it's all live on the Connectively platform. All the journalists are posting directly on Twitter. And they'll be asking for specific experts or specific opinions. So what your job as a marketer is, you need to see if your skills and expertise align with those specific questions and queries, and then position yourself as an expert and as a good source of commentary for that journalist, where they can bolster and improve their article by using your comments. So if you run a finance website and you are a finance expert, maybe you're an accountant, a CPA, a CFP, and the journalist is asking for opinions on ways to reduce your credit limit, then when you see that query, that's when you pounce, because that's a perfect query. You're a perfect expert. As long as you can craft a well-formulated pitch that makes sense, it's unique, it can resonate with the journalist, then you've got a really good chance of the journalist picking your quote and including your quote within their article. So it's labor intensive. There's a lot of luck to it. You've got to look through those queries, hope that you find one which is a good fit, and then also craft a good pitch, and then hope that the journalist picks your pitch and includes it.
All right. So I do want to get more in deep into this reactive process, because does that mean that your company already have like some story in or pitches in your pocket so that you have enough time, or like you're fast enough to reply? Because one of the challenges I've seen with this horror request is that if you're just not fast enough, people will, you know, pick another person, and it's almost like you have to be just as fast as the request. Or I don't know. That's just my opinion. What do you think?
Yeah, no, that's a good point. I think speed is an important element of the process, but journalists, from the feedback that we've got from journalists, because we talk with journalists directly quite a lot, speed is an important factor. So they will sort of post their request, and they'll often say how urgent their request is, and they'll give a deadline as well. They'll always give a deadline. But what most journalists do is they will go and have a look at the initial set of responses, and then they'll always come back to look at what's coming towards the end of their deadline. So I would never rush a request just for sake of being fast, but you do want to be able to craft a good pitch as quickly as possible, but don't sacrifice quality for speed, because you've got just as much chance, I think, if you send a really good pitch as you have if you send a quite a good pitch but fast. And we don't have pre-written responses, because that just wouldn't work, and the questions that the journalists are asking are so varied, and they're so dependent on often what's going on in the news right now, that a pre-written pitch wouldn't work. But it is good to have a good sense of different angles that you can take, and then obviously you can utilize the powers of AI for fast ideation, research, data analysis, and then that can really help speed up the pitch process.
I see. But if it's like very sensitive, like time sensitive, and it's related to the news, how do you think AI or GPT can help you? Because like GPT is only updated till 2022 or something.
Yeah. So, well, I mean, there's some great ways you can use ChatGPT, especially, and current news stories. So ChatGPT has the functionality to be able to read PDF documents. So if you've had something breaking in the news and a journalist is asking about it, you can take summarizations or file print a recent news article. So something that's just, you know, Google search, go to the news tab, see something that's come out in the last hour, 2 hours on that particular story, file, print, save as a PDF document, and then put that PDF document into ChatGPT, ask it to read the document and give you a 6-7 bullet point summary of what's happening in the news story. You can then take those bullet points, read them, interpret them, add your own opinion into them, and then formulate a pitch in that way. You can also use the AI prompts in other AI. So Gemini is really good. And then you have a tool called Perplexity, which is like bang up to date. And you can ask that to just basically search the internet and give you bang up to date information on a particular trending story. And ChatGPT is also really good at like cross analysis of different ideas. So
yeah,
let's say one thing which journalists are doing a lot now is that it's really hot, is they want to have experts' opinion on something that's gone viral. So be it on TikTok or Reddit. So you may have a Reddit thread, which has caught the attention of the mainstream media. You can download that entire Reddit thread, turn it into a PDF document, and then put that into ChatGPT. And then you could ask ChatGPT to read through the thread and formulate some opinions or give you some summarizations as to what's being discussed in the thread. So it can just save you massive amounts of time.
That is awesome. Do you need a ChatGPT plugin for it to read PDFs, right? You do, right?
No, it's just part of the data analyst tool, which I think is on the free plan. But if it's not, then it's on the paid like monthly plan. But it's just a little paperclip icon. So just upload. And you can upload multiple documents as well. This is the really powerful thing. So if you have a strong opinion on something, but you want to get the opinion of like other multiple sources, let's say a new product's been released, you could find a positive review and a negative review from a really up-to-date high authority news website, download both PDFs, upload them both, and ask ChatGPT to cross analyze both the documents and give you like a well-rounded opinion based on both of the opinions across across the two documents.
Wow. Okay. I think that's like a whole SOP that we all need to use. Like, thank you so much for sharing this. This is awesome. Yeah. Do you mostly use, it seems like you also both use Gemini and ChatGPT. Which one do you prefer? Or is it like GPT is for analysis and then Gemini is for trend? Or like, what do you
think? Yeah. We're playing with everything. Like, and it's moving so fast at the minute, like new stuff's coming out every second. ChatGPT is really good at the cross analysis stuff. It has a real good grasp of following stuff through. So like a long document or multiple PDF documents, it's really good at reading it and understanding it and interpreting it. Gemini does some really nice output. Anthropic's model, Claude as well, the new Claude Opus 3 model, it produces some really good sounding human output. And the key for this as well is, we're pitching journalists. So journalists' profession is writing. They understand a well-written piece of text and they can smell an AI piece of content from a million miles away. So I think AI is a vitally important tool in our toolbox, but we have to make our pitches and our content not look like AI. And in order to do that, you can use AI to make your AI not look like AI.
Yes. I mean, I personally have like a list of banned words. Like, these are the words I do not want you to use. So that's already like something that helps me and my team. But I'm pretty sure there are so many other ways to like make AI not to sound like AI. How does a good pitch look like though for a journalist? So like, say that you have the article ready, that could be good for their request. Do you actually write the article on the spot as a reactive, or is that something that's already done and then you need to like craft the email as a pitch? What's the process there? Like, what do you recommend?
So the journalist is working on their own article. And they're just looking, they're sourcing expert commentary, which they can weave into the article that they're working on. So it will be an unfinished, previously non-published article that they're working on. Let's say recently in the news, there was, I don't know if you saw an image of Kate Middleton from the UK, and it looked like it had been AI doctored. So this blew up in the news, and we saw a lot of requests yesterday and the day before asking for any like image experts, tech experts, photography experts that could give some commentary on how to spot like a fake photo. So the journalist is already working on their article about the Kate Middleton AI looking photo, and they just wanted to add in some comments from experts that could say, as an AI photography image expert, here are two ways that you can easily spot an AI image. So what you need to do is just craft a really good response to the journalist with something interesting that when they're looking through the people that have sent pitch responses in, they go, this one is really interesting and will make my article better, more informative, more authoritative.
Okay. And in this case, like, how do you outcompete the other people who would do the same thing as you, right? Because they must have gotten like hundreds of reactions. Mm-hmm.
That's a good point. So like you said before, you want to try and have I call it the anatomy of a perfect pitch. So you want to make sure you're including all your core components of a good pitch, which will be things like a hook, some linguistic flurry. So journalists love to quote interesting small segments, so they're not looking for an essay. Oftentimes they've already formulated their opinion on the story that they're working on, and they're just looking to include commentary from other experts that makes their article better. And oftentimes they'll just include like one sentence, and that one sentence will be a really interesting use of the English language. So a particularly interesting turn of phrase or an idiom or a saying, something that just stands out on the page. And you'll see that's the part that they use and quote, and then you win the link. So definitely including those core elements, personability as well. If you can add some sort of personal touch, they love that as well. Facts and figures, if you've got any of your own data, they love that. And then, to stand out in the journalist inbox, I would say it's probably in some ways got easier. It's possibly the golden era of being able to respond to these pitch responses because of the onset of AI. So whereas before AI, a journalist might have received maybe 10 or 15 responses, then as AI has done this, journalists' inboxes are getting bombarded with hundreds of pitch responses. But So many have just been produced with one-click AI output. The journalists can just spot it. So they just delete, 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 delete. And when they see a good pitch, it stands out. So if you can do a really good, well-crafted, well-written pitch, you've got a really good chance of standing out in amongst the competition.
That sounds like that you mostly use AI for data research then and like angle analysis. But then once it comes to actually writing this pitch, you use like full 100% like yourself, like it's just you are the one writing it, right? To make it more personal.
We have a team of human editors, so AI is great for ideation. It's also great to contextualize ideas, and then everything sort of gets put together through a process, and then everything we send on behalf of our clients goes through a final human editing stage. So that's where you can basically factually check, make sure that you've included these core elements of a good pitch, and then add this interesting linguistic flurry, these nice idiom sayings, and really, really sort of check to make sure everything looks really, really good before sending it to the journalist. And you made an excellent point earlier. You said you got a banned list of AI sounding words. We have the same thing. You don't need a tool to test for AI. You can just tell because of like these 10 or 15 or 20 like phrases that you see time and time and time again. So make sure you're not using any of them and you got a good chance.
Yes. So I think there's a bunch of takeaways here to like how to actually do reactive, thorough pitches. And I'm really thankful that you also made a differentiation between digital PR and thorough. In your agency, like how much does your work is like digital PR and how much is your work is digital PR and how much is like reactive thorough?
Our digital PR is much newer than the Harrow. So we're probably at 70% Harrow, 30% monthly digital PR campaigns for clients. But with Harrow, you have, I think it's really important to, if you're a growing company and you've got budget for link building, then a mix of the two is great because there is a clear distinction between the domains that are available to you to win links from via digital PR. It tends to be quite UK centric. The websites are fantastic, equally as good as Harrow. But oftentimes these links, which are available via digital PR, aren't available via Harrow and vice versa. So from our experience, we know that certain domains, they're just not receptive to digital PR. So off the top of my head, like websites like realtor.com. If you've got a website in the home niche, you know, home interiors, design, real estate, that sort of thing. Realtor.com is a huge domain and it's a website that you definitely, definitely want to get a link from. But nobody from realtor.com is reading PR emails from media lists, at least not in our experience. And if they do, it's very, very small. However, they are regularly requesting sources via Harrow and Connectively. So you can almost put them in two buckets of the available domains that you can win for your website. So I think Harrow is great to get all of the sort of Harrow and expert quote style domains, and then digital PR is great to get all of the digital PR style domain. So a mix of the two, it would be perfect for a business with budget.
Also, what domains do you think, what determines like this domain is not going to do digital PR whereas the other domain does?
It's going to be on a journalist level. So it's whether or not when you're doing digital PR, you build a media list of journalists that write for publications. Oftentimes the major sort of US high authority publications, they're not really receptive to these sorts of emails, or often you can't find email contact details for their writers, or they're not employing journalists as writers, they're employing sort of freelance expert writers for those websites. Whereas digital PR is more ingrained in like UK publications, and their journalists or the journalists that are writing for these news articles are very much ingrained in like that the PR workflow. So waking up in the morning, looking through all of the emails that have come in from PRs and seeing what would be good for stories for those publications on any given day. So it's just sort of a differentiation between the ways that the publications are producing their content.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Thank you. That's a great insight. Like, I never heard of this before. So thank you so much for sharing that. Next question is, like, now that you have, like, experience with both digital PR and reactive, like, what's the ROI? Like, what's the, like, how many links can you, on average, like, based on your research, like, based on your testing, like, on average, like, how many links can I get from, like, digital PR and HARO? Like, do you think it's more or less, or is that, do you see, like, a major difference between the two, or is it quality difference, a scalability difference?
I think it's a domain difference. And it depends how you're purchasing the product. So for us, we've productized the expert quote side. So the HARO side, we've just productized as a 5, 10, 20 or 50 link package. Now, we have quite long lead times on the deliverables of those package because you are at the behest of the journalists. You are, there's a massive amount of luck. You've got a seasonality, time of year. But the way we work is you buy the number of links, then fill out your onboarding, sit back and wait, and we will just keep pitching journalists until we hit the number of links you have won. PR is different. You sort of work on a monthly basis, and you'll take time to ideate something, build a media list, and then pitch that idea to journalists in like a timely fashion. And you can win. You can have a story that does quite well, maybe 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 links. It might be a bust. It might not get picked up at all, and you have to sort of rework the story, retweak the media list, pitch again. Or you could get a story go absolutely, you know, monumentally viral, and you could get 100 links off a 1 month campaign. Again, there is a lot of luck to that, seasonality, client, many factors. But the links that you'll get on those sort of 100 link wins, it won't be 100 Forbes, New York Times, BBC. You'll get a mix of those top tier one publications. You'll get some syndicates, and then you'll get sort of lower quality domains also picking up and running with the story. Whereas for the productized HARO PR requester links, each link is cherry picked. So you'll have that high authority on each link that's won. So again, it's just two different approaches, but you're basically trying to get the same thing: great links and, you know, coverage plastered across the internet so that Google can see that you are an authority and an expert in your space.
Love it. Thank you so much for all the details, like, answer. I think that you are basically teaching us, like, digital PR link building right here, and I'm so thankful. And I think I'm getting so much into the whole topic, but before I let you go, is like, let's address the elephant in the room, and it's like the recent core update that happened last weekend. What's your comment?
How are you coping?
I'm happy. Like, all of our clients are great. They're That's okay. Good. They're like safe, but it's not like we didn't abuse AI content at all. So I didn't see that it would be a harm for us. But I've been reading all these like Facebook comments and yeah, I'm part of all these Facebook groups, so I kind of see them. Anyway, so just your commentary. How has this been core update been for you? Is it bringing more business, stable right now? What's your take?
I think it was bound to happen. We knew that Google was going to do something with the AI. Their index is bloated. They want to reduce the size of their index, cost saving. For us, we haven't really noticed that much change. I mean, the people that buy links from us tend to sort of understand the value of white hat good link building. So they tend to not be buying the best premium link building service that they can, and then in the meantime also like churning out crap AI content and buying really dodgy links off Fiverr. So we haven't really had any indication that any of our clients have suffered. We own some websites as well. None of our websites have been affected. So I think if you're taking that more above the board approach, then you probably are doing okay. Time will tell as well. I think it's too early to jump to any conclusions. We're only like 8 days into this update. We have to let the dust settle. I've seen many websites de-indexed, re-indexed a few days later. Influencers, it's probably more of a warning sign to influencers. Don't reveal your URLs. Don't publicly build sites, because Google's not, if it finds you, which we've seen that it has, it's going to ding the site that it finds and then any other site that's linked to that site. So I think just be careful. Good content, good links, I think still the message from us. And we'll see, have to see where the dust settles in the coming weeks.
I like that. Honestly, like, it's just summarizes so well. Good content, good links, and you'll be good. Like, it's just keeping it simple. But I think from what I've been you know, listening to you is like many of these things are also depends on luck and trends.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's something that us marketers, we cannot control, but we can do our best to like react to all these things. So that's a great summary. As I said, like this podcast is also like you as a marketer growing, and I see that you are a very hardworking person. Like you've been working 12 hours a day and you started your business. Could you just tell us, like go back in time and tell us that time, how did you overcome that period? It sounds really hard.
I loved doing the online stuff. I was addicted as soon as I started and got a taste for it, like, oh my God. And being in a bricks and mortar business for so many years and having a fixed circumference radius of potential customers, like it doesn't matter what you could do. You could run Facebook ads, promotions. You are physically limited to the amount of people that you're ever going to have come to your fixed location business. As soon as I got a taste of online was like the circumference was the entire earth and like your potential customers were everywhere. The bug was just inspiring. And I couldn't pull myself away from the growth of the business. And it allowed me to sort of wind my bricks and mortar business up to a point where I could sell it. And then also come into the online business to a sustainable point where we could grow. So it was, if I could go back in time, I would have started this business 25 years ago, but can't do that. So my advice to anyone just starting though is try. That's one of the great things about online is the barriers to entry are quite low. Like if you want to start a site, start an agency, like just dip your toes in, give it a go. And also talk to people in the community, make connections on Twitter, LinkedIn, maybe go to some conferences. So many people out there will be willing to help you, give you advice. And the more connections you make, the more genuine interactions you make with people that in the space that you're interested in, the more that you're going to have like success months and years down the line if you ever need them or, you know, want to utilize a network that you've grown. So that would be my advice.
That's great. Thank you so much for sharing that. All right. So I think that basically summarizes the last question too. So my last question is always like, if you could go back in time, what would you do differently? But I think you kind of answered this already.
Yeah. I said it. I'd have done it 25 years earlier. But if I go back in time to the point where we started, I probably would have given more credence to systems, SOPs, documentation, that sort of thing. We grew really fast, and that was always something that we thought we can do that later. But obviously we've done it now, but I think if we'd have made that a priority as early as possible, it would have made some of our growing teething problems more bearable, because you can't put a price on like quality documentation, SOPs, systems, processes. So I think that's what we would have done.
Wow, thank you so much for sharing this is really helpful for me. I just joined an agency too, so I'm the one responsible for SOPs, and sometimes I feel like my job is just not that important, because like I'm not a strategist or somebody who executes the job. I don't know, but I feel like with this comment, I feel like my job is more important now.
Oh, yeah. Definitely.
All right. Thank you so much, Chris. And I hope to see you. I will see you at the SEO Mastery Summit in April next month. So
yes, I'm looking forward to it. Thank you. Thank you for having me, Ani. Thank you very much.
Awesome. So, babe, before you go, if people would like to reach out to you, how can they find you?
Linkify.io is our website, or you can find me on Twitter, Linkify_, LinkedIn as well. Chris Pantele on LinkedIn is a good channel.
All right. Thank you.
Or come to the SEO Mastery in Vietnam.
Yay! See me there. Yeah. That would be a massive help and support me and Chris. Like, yeah, it's going to be a big event. So, awesome. All right.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.